Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey, this is former Blue Devil O-lineman Matt Skura. You're listening to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. Go Duke, go ACC.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC football podcast. My name's Joey Weaver, he's Mike McDaniel. Mike, how you been? What's going on?
Good. We record at midnight or after midnight in the postseason as well, apparently. That's what we do.
Yeah, Saturday Night Fever, you know.
Just it never ends.
It never ends.
Never mind the fact it's, you know, late January. Saturday Night Fever it is. It's not live, just this is when we're all free.
It's live for the three of us.
Yeah, it is live for the three of us. That's true. We have mentioned in the last couple of weeks that we have some news we need to get in on here. We're a couple days removed. Again, this is just after midnight, Saturday night, Sunday morning into Sunday, January the 28th, I guess. But so we're a few days removed from the ACC announcing its full 2024 football schedule. So figured we'd talk about that, and figured we'd talk about one other kind of key piece of news that we've mentioned here, but we haven't really gotten to dive into yet, so we go ahead and do that. Maybe there's something that we're forgetting. Hopefully not. Probably, but hopefully not. But, Mike, are you you want to dive in news-wise?
Yeah, let's start with this. Jeff Collins, your friend. Your friend, Jeff Collins.
That's a strong word.
He was hired as Mac Brown's new defensive coordinator at North Carolina.
What the fuck is that? Why? Why?
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Just all the sound effects.
That was beautiful. That was a chorus of them.
Nice little bouquet of sound effects there. Yeah.
I like that. Well, I mean, he was a good defensive coordinator like a decade ago.
Let's start there. Like, there have been crazier hires that I've seen, right? Like, mm-hmm. Jeff Collins does have a history. He spent, you know, a good part of the 2010s as a fully successful defensive coordinator. I believe it was FIU, and then for multiple years for Dan Mullen at Mississippi State.
And at Florida.
Like, 4 years for, that wasn't under Mullen at Florida. That was, who was before him? Who was the guy who was naked on the boat with the shark?
Jim McElwain.
That one. I believe it was Jim mm-hmm. McElwain. Yeah, he was a good defensive coordinator for years. And so I get it from that standpoint, but at the same time, you know, I mean, defenses at Temple maybe were okay, but like his defenses at Georgia Tech were such a disaster, Mike. I mean, they just like, they didn't communicate well. They weren't physical. Like there was very little redeeming about him for most of the time that he was there.
Oh, so he'll fit right in under Mac Brown, North Carolina, is what you're saying.
He'll keep pace. He'll keep pace.
Yeah. My immediate takeaway was like, okay, he was a good defensive coordinator like a decade ago. It seems like a Gene Chizik retread in a lot of ways. Maybe not schematically, right? It's going to be a different looking defense, but in terms of like the type of hire that this feels a lot like just going back to the well with a guy who's done it before, and not necessarily having like the foresight to, you know, maybe hire somebody up and coming, or I don't know. I don't feel particularly good about this for the reasons you just said, because his defenses were so bad at Georgia Tech. They were just kind of okay at Temple. A big reason why he had the uptick in success at Temple towards the end of his tenure was because the offense was so damn good, not because of the defense. Defense was fine, but it wasn't like that wasn't why Temple was winning the games they were winning, right? yeah, I had kind of the similar reaction. It's like, this could work. I've seen worse hires. He has been a good defensive coordinator in his career. But like, Gene Chizik had been a good defensive coordinator in his career. He had been a successful head coach somewhere, like at a big time school, right? Yeah. Jeff Collins got done at Temple, admirable job, flamed out at Georgia Tech for a number of different reasons.
Yeah.
And chief among them was because the defense sucked. It wasn't the recruiting, wasn't they couldn't recruit. You know, it wasn't that you know, he didn't, you know, retain skill position players on offense or anything like that. It was because the defense sucked. That was his calling card. And
yeah,
that was a big reason why the tenure didn't work out.
That was the most unforgivable part of it. Like, were other parts of it underwhelming? Yeah. Like, what was the offense underwhelming, struggle to develop? Yeah. But I think the single most damning thing was always, this guy is supposed to be a defensive coordinator, a defensive mind, and their defense sucks. Like, it's not good, and it's not even just from a talent standpoint. Again, it was like a disorganization, lack of communication. I mean, the number of times you'd see blown coverages in the secondary. Jeff Collins is a secondary coach, specifically. Like, has developed corners and safeties throughout his career, and that's kind of his biggest calling card. And when that part of the defense is failing year after year under him, what can you say? You know, if you can't get that right, what can you get right? So I do think it's interesting, Mack Brown going back to the well of former head coach, kind of tenured veteran coach guy, like he did with Gene Chizik, as opposed to going for someone a little bit more maybe up and coming, like that kind of thing. Some of this makes me wonder, you know, does Mack Brown see the writing on the wall of we're running out of time here before they're not going to fire Mack Brown. Like, my understanding is that he is a made man in Chapel Hill, but there might be some conversations about, what if we move you to an off-field role, head coach Mack Brown? And what if, you know, like, what if we just retire, maybe? Like, you know, like, is he trying to avoid some of those conversations, maybe? I don't know.
Well, and there were some talks, rumors on message boards quite strongly over the last couple of weeks that Mack Brown was actually getting ready to retire, which then he went out and hired Jeff Collins. And it was like, well, he's probably not retiring if he's the one making the defensive coordinator hire, obviously. So either way,
some of the talk was like, well, is bringing in a former head coach, is that set up Jeff Collins to be the interim? Which, have fun with that.
Yeah.
Get rid of the depth charts.
Yeah, the thing I'd be interested about, this conversation I'm about to have is really gonna piss Joey off, but the thing I'd be interested about is, like, can Collins go and win somewhere other than Georgia Tech in the P5? Like, it's kind of a similar conversation I had with Fuente, right? Except with Fuente, the difference was, like, Virginia Tech had the resources and didn't have the issues that Georgia Tech has in terms of, like, a guy coming in and, like, having success right away. You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of easier. It's, like, better set up to, you know, we've talked about the academic issue, not issues. It's obviously Georgia Tech's a very good school, but
limitations, restrictions.
Yeah. That Virginia Tech, a very good school as well, but just doesn't have, compared to Georgia Tech. They don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if Jeff Collins in a different situation would kind of be able to flourish a little bit better. Again, North Carolina, very good academic institution, right? But they are able to get their athletes into school there. And
especially
Georgia,
online classes, it turns out.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So would Collins have any success there? I mean, he had some success at Temple, which, again, from an academic standpoint, you can get your athletes into school there.
Yeah.
But recruiting wasn't his issue. Like, that's the other part of the argument. Recruiting was not his issue at Georgia Tech. He actually did a decent job recruiting at Georgia Tech. It was kind of everything else. So I don't know. I don't think, I mean, for a while, the conversation around Carolina was that the interim, if it ever, like, went down that path, was going to be Dre Bly. And then, of course, you know, Dre Bly was off the staff last season, and that's obviously not going to happen anymore. But that would have been very interesting, considering, like, how he recruits, but then he lost, like, the entire DB room. So whatever.
Yeah. I'm with you, honestly. I think there's a chance that Jeff Collins could be successful as a head coach elsewhere. Like, we have seen people have seen coaches that fail in their first chance as a head coach and then kind of find some more success later down the road. It's possible to learn and grow and develop as a coach and figure some things out.
Chef Tedford, Sonny Dykes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could argue that Will Muschamp was better at South Carolina than he was at Florida.
Right.
Know, like,
yeah. Right.
So it's not crazy for guys to learn and to do better in their second try than they were in the first try. But there were some things too, just the way that he was perceived that I almost halfway thought, like, is Jeff Collins ever going to get another job? Like, is he done coaching? Just the way that it seemed like he was perceived, and I don't know. So we'll
many
see.
Parallels with Fuente. So many parallels.
All I'll say is that I will be very surprised if this is the secret sauce, if he's the guy that cracks the code for fixing defense at North Carolina that has been such a consistent issue for, what, 15 years? Like, when's the last time North Carolina had a legit solid defense? Is Jeff Collins going to solve that puzzle? I don't know. Probably not. So,
I don't know. 1980 with Lawrence Taylor? I don't know.
Julius Peppers played there.
That's true.
What was that, 2003?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Can it be any worse than the Chizik-led defenses last couple of years?
I would
probably
say no.
Probably not. I mean...
I thought their defense looked really good, actually, in, like, September of last year. And, you know, I think it was South Carolina that they dominated there, like, in week one. And, like, it actually looked pretty good there for a few weeks. And then, like, the wheels just completely came off. I don't know if that was against Miami or someone. But it was like, oh, nope, never mind. That's the North Carolina defense we all know and love.
Yeah. Yeah, we realized pretty quickly. I mean, these are the things you don't get answers to right after week one, but we found out in like mid-October that South Carolina was just not going to block anybody the entire season is what that turned out to be. So added that up.
North Carolina not racking up 9 sacks per week. It turns out that was not a sustainable trend,
but it was a sustainable trend for South Carolina's offensive line. So
correct. Yeah. Exactly. Mike, anything else on North Carolina before we move on and avoid Scott giving us grief over going more than 10 minutes that we said we were going to cap this
discussion. I actually have a question.
Yeah.
Did he have any offsetting language in his Georgia Tech contract?
I don't know for certain off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure he did not. Hmm. And the reason that I'm pretty sure he did not is... the reason I'm pretty sure he did not is that everything that I understand about that whole contractual negotiation, the whole contract situation, was that Georgia Tech was negotiating from a point of power and you never would have known it by the terms of that contract. Like, they committed way too many years, way too much money to him for, like, it was totally unnecessary. So at that point, no, why would they put offsetting language in there? That would have been responsible, and nothing about this contract was responsible, so probably not. Like,
okay.
Shout out Todd Sainsbury.
Shout out Todd. Yeah, well, that's why he's no longer there.
I was gonna say I was a fan of him when he was hired. I thought that was kind of fun, kind of a good hire, former player at Georgia Tech, all that stuff. That couldn't have gone much more poorly. It did not go very well at all. So,
well, if Jeff Collins, if he flames out here too, he'll be able to buy plenty of boats and cars and gigantic houses, and he'll be fine.
I will say, looking back on kind of some of the discussions and such that was had around the time that he was hired, Jeff Collins seems like he is a hell of a smooth talker. Like, he can really convince people of some things and really sell himself. Like, it really seemed like Todd Sainsbury was really, really sold on him from, you know, right out the gate. And I just wonder what some of those conversations actually sounded like.
That's why he's a good recruiter.
I guess that's, yeah, probably true. Probably true. All right. Yeah. Jeff Collins, defensive coordinator at North Carolina. We will see how that goes.
Might work, might not.
Yeah. Higher chance it doesn't, I think. But
yeah. I've made this clear. I'm done with Mac.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Yeah. Well, We'll see how that goes. Mike, do you want to do podcast business before we jump into schedule stuff?
Yes.
This podcast, as all of ours, brought to you by Section103.com, the internet's premier place for all things wonderful Georgia Tech apparel. They've got t-shirts, they've got sweatshirts, they've got hoodies, things for men, women, children, things with the official Tech Gold, the official word marks, all those things. We love all of the things from Section103.com. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. They've got jerseys. Again, Haynes King, Dante Smith still, I think, or some of those are in stock. Zach Pyron, Miles Kelly off the basketball team. Go find things there. They also have gotten some new sizes in stock, by the way. So if you were unaware, you know, before, I think there was like 3XL, 4XL, maybe were not in stock or maybe were never stocked. Those are now available on the website. So go check those things out. Once again, use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. Section103.com for all the wonderful Georgia Tech apparel that you need in your life. Mike, go check them out.
I will. Also sponsored by Home Field Apparel.
Mm-hmm.
Home Field's been fantastic as well. Use promo code GOACC at checkout, 15% off your first order. They're still pushing those bomber jackets. Those are pretty sick. Very comfortable, officially licensed collegiate apparel at most ACC institutions. We got to get an update on Stanford. I know they're working on adding some schools, but Whitney has not revealed what schools those are to us yet.
Yeah.
By email. So they're working on something. I don't know if it'll be Stanford, but I'm sure they'll come down the pipe at some point as we welcome Stanford into this podcast.
Can I interrupt you here real quick?
Absolutely.
And something that you didn't know I was going to do here. This is totally off the cuff.
Oh, sure. Okay. Excellent.
There is a new addition to the Weaver household here that I feel like I need to tell you about and tell the people about.
I don't know where this is going, but please continue.
Fans of a certain school will be very, very excited to know that we have a new addition to the Weaver household in the form of a beautiful, beautiful baby blue home field t-shirt.
If you're only listening, go watch the YouTube.
I say, the people listening don't get a visual here. Scott, can you tell the people real quick what you're looking at? What is this shirt?
I'm looking at a beautiful blue shirt that Joey's holding up, and it just says 13-9.
Yeah, that would be a Pitt Panthers shirt from homefieldapparel.com. I forget if I mentioned it on this podcast. I went to Split Zone Duo Live when they were here in Houston before the national title game. And there was a fun t-shirt roulette game that we played. And it was basically just you pay money and you tell them your size. And then after that, you get a bingo ball that correlated with any random shirt from the home field lineup. And sure enough, by the luck of the draw, I got a Pitt Panthers 13-9 shirt, which there's a reference there. If you're not aware of it, we'll talk about it again someday, when I'm wearing the shirt.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm glad you added that to your rotation. When you said there was a new addition to the Weaver household, I was like, oh, another kid, another dog.
Maybe a fish.
Specific word choice. I figured I'd send your mind down a different path.
And that you did. Anyway, check out Home Field Apparel. Go ACC at checkout. 15% off your first order.
Do it. You, too, can get a beautiful, comfortable 13-9 shirt representing the Pitt win over West Virginia back in 2007?
Yes.
As a non-bowl eligible Pitt team kept West Virginia out of the national title game.
Yep.
LOL.
Yep.
Well, Pitt.
It's one of the greatest wins in school history.
Mike, we have a football schedule.
Yeah, we do.
Yay.
Where do we start with this? So once again, first year with three new schools. We've got SMU, we've got Stanford, and we've got Cal.
Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah, for those new to the Atlantic Coast here, from Berkeley and Palo Alto and Dallas. Welcome.
Glad to have you.
We've confirmed that nobody has to travel to to multiple of those. If you travel to one of them, that's the only one you travel to. So that's kind of nice.
That is. Yep.
So there's that.
Yes, but the travel doesn't get easier for those new teams for obvious reasons.
Well, yes, that's true.
Yeah.
When you're Cal and Stanford and you agree to play in a conference that's primarily made up of people
3,000 miles away.
Starting at 3,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're going to spend a lot of time in an airplane. So make sure you've got one of those frequent flyer accounts to track those miles.
Yeah, wear your home field apparel.
That's right. That's
you're
right.
Need it.
They got cool joggers. Great for wearing on planes.
There you go.
That's right.
There you go.
The other thing to remember here as we get into this is that with the addition of these new teams, the ACC has once again changed up its schedule structure. So originally when we were for the longest time doing this podcast, you had divisions and you'd play, six opponents in your division, and then you would play one permanent opponent and then one other rotating crossover game with the other division. So that was your 8 conference games. Then they changed it up. We spent 1 year this past year playing, I believe it was 3 fixed opponents, and then the other 5 games were rotating year over year. So you'd basically play everyone home and away every 4 years, everyone either home or away every other year. That was only a 1 year deal because now we've got more teams. And so now we have it to where certain teams have different numbers of fixed annual opponents. If you remember when the Big Ten came out with their schedule, it's a very similar setup where they did not say that like, oh, everybody has 3 or everybody has 1. It's some teams have 3, some teams have none. It's kind of, you know, here or there. So I believe, again, Georgia Tech and Louisville have none. I think a lot of the Triangle, those teams have each other, you know, at least the North Carolina teams, I guess all in general, maybe all play each other every year. So it's, you know, I'm not smart enough to come up with the algorithm that makes all these schedules work with each other. I don't know how they did this, but
yeah,
just as a reminder, structure-wise, Mike.
Yeah, the double bye and where those are positioned in the schedule makes things very, very interesting for mm-hmm. a few different schools.
And that's by the way, that's not a fundamental built-in feature of just the schedule year over year. That's just the way the calendar works this year is the double
yeah.
bye
leap
thing.
Year.
Everyone gets 2
leap
byes.
Leap year. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. a leap year. We got pretty much every team, most teams in the ACC have a late August game, right? Week 1 is a little bit earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Tech and Florida State play in Ireland in week 0.
Mm-hmm.
So that you know, those are 2 ACC teams playing in that opening weekend. Yeah, I mean there are teams who are obviously only going to Stanford once or only going to Cal once, but you know, have Stanford, Cal, and SMU on the schedule, right? So it's interesting. It's interesting. There are some tough stretches for a few different teams. So I think the easiest way to do this, Joey, is to call out some interesting scheduling quirks for a handful of these teams. If we don't mention your team on this podcast tonight and you're screaming at us, that's fine. We have to look at like a million of these schedules. So bear
scream
with us.
Scream at us in the comments, though, and subscribe while you're doing it.
That's right. See, that's why. Great job, Scott. Thank you. Absolutely. Absolutely. So
YouTube.com/@theACCFootballPodcast.
Yeah. So we did the best we could to scope out some of the tougher schedules here in the ACC. I think we've done a
yeah,
pretty good job doing
if
that.
You guys want me to zoom on this document? If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see that we are displaying the logo schedule. So you could see it with all your viewing pleasure. So I can zoom in a little bit if you guys want to look at this.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Where to begin, Joey? I think the one obvious one we need to talk about is Stanford.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the ACC, Stanford. Joey, Stanford has a open week on September 14th. They opened the year against TCU on a Friday night at home. Then they play Cal Poly, which should be a win. Then they get their first open week, okay? So you're either mm-hmm. going to be 1-1 or 2-0. If you're 0-2, I'm sorry, because
yeah,
Joey, I'm going to list off the stretch until their next open week on November 9th. All right, so we have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have a 7-game stretch here that I'm not sure how many of these games Stanford actually wins. Are you ready?
7 games, 7 weeks, all in a row. Yep.
Yes.
Hit me.
Ready? at Syracuse. Have fun with that. And that's not because like Syracuse is going to be like this amazing team this year, but a plucky year one team on the road. Yeah, enjoy that. At Clemson, home against Virginia Tech. At Notre Dame, home against SMU, home against Wake, at NC State.
Woof.
Yo, listen. Listen. Clemson's going to be a top 15 team. Virginia Tech is going to have high expectations. Notre Dame is going to be a top 15 team. SMU is probably going to be a top 20 team. Wake Forest is maybe the most winnable game there, at home, like as far as like the home games are concerned. And then at NC State, which I think will be one of the trendy teams in the ACC, might be a popular early season pick to maybe sneak into the conference championship. I mean, how many of those games is Stanford winning?
I was just thinking about this. Like, if you're being really optimistic, like you're hoping for like 3 and 4.
Right. You're hoping for 3 and 4, and I think it's more like 1 or 2.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that, I mean, I know Stanford hired, was it Troy Taylor?
Troy Taylor.
Of Sacramento State.
That's correct.
I think there's a chance that he'll build something there, and they'll get back to being decent and being competitive in a way that maybe they haven't been for a few years there at the tail end of the David Shaw era.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to totally write off Stanford, but I mean, in a month and a half, you're flying to Syracuse, then you're flying to Clemson, then you're flying to South Bend, then you're flying to Raleigh. Like, man, that's a lot of travel, and there's a lot of physical games there, and just that is gonna be a brutal stretch.
I mean, they're gonna stay on the East Coast. I mean, they're flying to Syracuse, and then 8 days later, they're at Clemson. I mean, they're not gonna go home, I don't think.
Bro, we're talking about Stanford.
Can they afford that?
It's not about football at Stanford. It's about classes. Like, yeah. Yes, they're going home.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think they can afford that. I think it's cheaper to go home and come back than it is to pay for a week to stay.
That Syracuse game is on a Friday, too, by the way. So that's an extra day, even.
Yeah, Virginia Tech has a similar instance like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was looking at it. I want to say that Georgia Tech and North Carolina might be the only ones in the conference. Once again, somebody's yelling at their radio right now. I think Georgia Tech and North Carolina are the only ones in the conference that don't play any of the newcomers.
I believe you're correct. Looking at this quickly for Georgia Tech and North Carolina.
Yeah, and I
think that's correct.
I don't know how that works out numbers wise or schedule wise. Again, this is like the least cohesive conference schedule that like we've ever seen. So again, it's very easy when you're looking at when it's the coastal division and like they all play each other, like that is a lot easier to kind of line up and look at. But yeah, this is trying to figure out who's playing who, and it's a whole thing.
Clemson. So, I mean, Clemson's going to come into the year like they always do with, you know, some sort of high expectations, right? And they finished the year strong, right, relative to kind of where they were in October to mm-hmm. kind of where they finished. They opened the year against Georgia. Enjoy. Home against App State. Open week. And then you get NC State at home, which I think it's a good year to get the Wolfpack at home, not have to go on the road to play that game. You host Stanford, which is winnable. You travel to Florida State, which, you know, Florida State's going to be in a rebuild. So that could be winnable, obviously. You're at Florida State, at Wake, home against Virginia, and then the closing stretch has the potential to be kind of tough, right?
Mm-hmm.
Host Louisville, you travel to Virginia Tech, you travel to Pittsburgh. Home against the Citadel should be a win, and then home against South Carolina, which, you know, who knows?
Only 4 true away games? That's low.
Only 4 true away games.
Both back, though.
And you get the, you know, you get Georgia in Atlanta for the opener, which will be, I think, will be well traveled by Clemson fans, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say,
being in Atlanta.
The entire, before you get to October, Clemson's players will spend a grand total of about 5 hours in transit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'll be probably a 2.5 hour bus ride to Atlanta, 2.5 hours back, and then you're at home, you got a bye week, and then you're at home, and you're at home.
Yeah.
Until you go to Tallahassee in October. Like,
yeah.
That's a really light travel schedule for the first month of the year.
And then it just gets more difficult. Like, and there's a lot of uncertainty, too. I mean, Clemson generally does a pretty nice job handling Wake Forest because of what Wake Forest tends to present in the trenches. So Clemson generally doesn't have too much of a problem winning that game. But going to Florida State, not really knowing what they're going to be against DJU, nonetheless, would be very funny. And then after that second bye week, Louisville at Virginia Tech, you go to Pittsburgh, which I don't know how Pitt's going to look, but going to Heinz Field is never a walk in the park. It's a tough closing stretch. Hopefully Clemson, you know, if you're a Clemson fan, you're hoping the Tigers are starting to hit their stride later in the year, kind of like they were this year, so that you can avoid making too big of a mess of the schedule.
Yep. I'll call out that Georgia Tech and Florida State, by playing in week zero, they don't have a double bye. They have a triple bye.
Mm-hmm.
And I think especially for Georgia Tech, it's interesting because both of these teams come back from Ireland, and neither of them have a bye week in week one, which is a strategy.
It's happened to Notre Dame last year, too.
Yeah, that feels not great. Georgia Tech comes back, and they'll play Georgia State at home, which, low-key, a little bit of a nightmare game.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a fired-up Georgia State team coming as you come back from overseas and that whole thing. Careful. Florida State, then, is hosting Boston College on a Monday. They're on Labor Day night, basically, so they get at least a couple extra days there to adjust, and that should be a winnable game for Florida State without a problem. The thing for Georgia Tech is that, so they get three bye weeks, two of them are in November. So you basically play, what, eight games nine games in 10 weeks, starting in week zero, and then you're off on November 2nd, you're at home against Miami, you're off on the 16th, you're at home against NC State on a Thursday, and then you're at Georgia on Thanksgiving weekend. So that's one of those where you get to November and they will spend a grand total of about 4 hours in transit the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Kind of strange. And I mean, it does present the opportunity to get healthy, really, honestly. Like, at that point of the season when you'd be most banged up is you're putting the least amount of stress on people. So it's just a matter of, can you get there? And then that could be three games that you're an underdog in, even two of which being at home. But ideally, you're able to, you know, use those bye weeks, get a little bit healthy, and maybe steal one of them. You know, we'll see.
Virginia has four of their final six games on the road. Listen to this closing stretch. Home against Louisville, at Clemson, home against North Carolina, open week, at Pitt, at Notre Dame, home against SMU, at Virginia Tech. Come on now. That's tough.
Tony and his muskets are going to have a hell of a year.
Or Anthony and his calandrias. Either way.
Well, I was speaking of Tony Elliott and then Tony Musket. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I see.
Also, I mean, Tony, calandria. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's right. Another Tony. There you go.
I mean, if they're going to feel good about making a bowl game, those first five games, Richmond at Wake, Maryland at Coastal, Carolina, and Boston College.
I think
at home,
they have to win them all.
I was gonna say 4-1.
Yeah, maybe. You gotta go at least 4-1. You might have to win them all because the closing stretch, I mean,
probably an underdog in almost every one of those games.
That's what I'm saying, right? So like, even like the worst team they're probably playing in the last five games is Pitt.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If they are what they were this year, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, they're worse than SMU this year.
Yeah, we'll and I'm just basing it off of, yeah, we're basing it off of what we just saw, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to really pluck a weakness. I mean, I don't think Pitt's going 3-9 again. So, I mean, even so, that's real tough. So, I think Virginia, just on paper, you can think what you want about their roster, but I just think on paper with the schedule and the way it sets up, just the home versus road splits and kind of where the open weeks are, and it's going to be real tough for Virginia to get to 6. And we had the season recap pod with Justin Ferber that, you know, by now I'm sure you all have listened to, or you're working your way towards it. We just released a bunch at one time, but you know, Justin said that this is a real put up or shut up year for Tony Elliott. Mm-hmm. And
you got to show progress.
And he said, doesn't necessarily mean you win 6 and get to a bowl game, but you got to win at least like 5 and look like you know what you're doing. And I'll tell you what, in a must win season, this does not set up very well, I don't think, on paper for UVA.
One home game in November. Not great.
Not great. And it's against SMU. So,
yeah, we'll see what they do. I am curious to see what especially SMU does this year. Mainly thinking about some of the newcomers to the Big 12 last year, and they really did, like, especially Houston and Cincinnati did not do very well down the stretch in the Big 12 games. Like,
right.
There was a clear lack of depth there that wasn't as much of a problem in the AAC as it was in the Big 12. So we'll see if SMU has the same issue in the ACC this year. We talked, Mike, we came on, we did the addendum for Miami, talking about having Cam Ward added on.
Yeah, yep.
And it does feel like that makes a difference. But I keep staring at this week one game.
I know.
In the swamp against Florida. And, man, you better come out firing on all cylinders there, because if you don't, like, you will be favored in that game. You should win that game. But it's losable if you screw around. And I just – new quarterback going on the road. The swamp's going to be rocking that night. Like, careful with that spot in particular, I think, if you're Miami.
Yeah, and anytime you have, like, a prime time type game in week one and you're on the road, like, again, new quarterback. I mean, Cam Ward's been there and done that, right? Like, he's a veteran, but game one with your new team and you're facing a big in-state rival, and this is a really important game for recruiting too, by the way. Like, Mario's got that thing rolling a little bit recruiting wise, and Florida's trying to make inroads, and this is probably more important in terms of recruiting for Billy Napier than it is for Mario Cristobal. But it's important for both guys, and this is even beyond it just being a big time week one game. This has kind of lasting implications in terms of recruiting in the state of Florida.
Yep.
But you kind of look further down the schedule for Miami, and I mean, the first 6 games are pretty manageable, right? Like, you get past Florida, and you know, your toughest game, you get Florida A&M, you get Ball State at home, at South Florida, home against Virginia Tech, at Cal. I mean, your toughest game is probably Virginia Tech after that Florida game, and you get them at home.
And so, otherwise, just being able to travel to the West Coast. I mean,
that's right. That's it. And, I mean, I think you feel pretty good about that opening stretch if you get by Florida. You know, I think you'll be ranked for a while. You'd have to really implode, I think, to lose to any of those next 3 schools, Florida A&M, Ball State, or South Florida. You know, Andy Golish, like, put together a nice year for South Florida, but, man, I mean, that's a different – Miami's a different animal athlete-wise, and, you know, even if he's recruiting well like he is and he's got a good scheme, that's a year or two situation up front that I'm not sure South Florida is going to necessarily be game for. So, Yeah, and then I mean the closing stretch for Miami is tough, but there are some games there that they are going to be favored in. I mean, they travel to Louisville, but they have an open week before, right? They host Florida State in a rivalry situation. They host Duke. That'll be an interesting game. Obviously, Manny Diaz going back to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
At Georgia Tech, house of horror situation for Miami. Open week. Home against Wake at Syracuse. Miami's going to be favored in several of those games. So, you know, if I see an over-under of like 8.5, and you look over. I think over, right? Like, I look at that front half of the schedule, and I think it's pretty manageable, and I look at the back half of the schedule, definitely tougher, but you get, you know, the outside of Louisville, you get your toughest games at home there. So, yeah. I think if I'm a Miami fan, I feel pretty good on paper about how the schedule sets up, especially if you get past week one on the road in the swamp.
If I were setting a number for Miami, I might put it at 10, honestly. Like, I was thinking 9.5, maybe 10 gives you a little bit of push insurance on both sides. But
yeah,
they're going to be favored in most of these games on their schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll even be favored. You mentioned this a minute ago, but I mean, I think they're going to be favored week one in the swamp. I think they'll be favored there. And yeah. I mean, what game are they not favored in? At Louisville?
It's halfway into the season. I mean, either of those teams could be anything at that point, it feels like. So that's possible. It's a candidate.
You can make the argument Miami's favored in every game they play.
Yeah. No, I think that's very much on the table.
And have it not really be a stretch, like just on paper going into the year.
There's a non-zero chance you could be an underdog at Louisville. There's a non-zero chance you could be an underdog at home against Florida State. But
where else?
I think, again, if I were setting the line of how many of these games is Miami favored in, probably 11. I would set that. That was the line. You know, like, they might be an underdog like one time this year.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I'd be surprised if it's more than that, unless the team performance is just nowhere near what we're thinking it's going to be. So.
Right. Which, I mean, it's in their nature. Hi, Cam.
Hey, Cam. Pitt's got Kent State at Cincinnati, West Virginia, Youngstown State. Is this the year, Mike, that they go 4-0 out of conference?
No. No.
I mean,
nope.
It would do Narduzzi well. Not that he is in that bad of a spot, but like, you know, it wouldn't hurt if he were to beat Cincinnati and or West Virginia here. Like, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Don't count out the feisty Penguins.
That's right. They're gonna go 3-0 and lose to Youngstown State. I love it. They had it in the bag a couple years ago, and then what was it? Western Michigan or something came in and just torched them the whole game. It was like you had it. You were there, and then. And the Western Michigan coach after the game was like, yeah, they've run the same stuff for years. Like, we knew exactly what we were going to do. It was going to work. And
yeah,
they ran up like 50 points on them. It's like
that second game of the year, I know Cincinnati wasn't great, but it was mostly like a defensive issue. They made a defensive coordinator hire, Tyson Veit. He was the linebackers coach at Iowa State, and Iowa State had a very strong linebacker unit, pretty good defense.
Mm-hmm.
Very under the radar hire by Scott Satterfield. I feel like if that Cincinnati it'll be week two, of course, but if that Cincinnati defense improves at all, which I think you hope it would, that's not going to be an easy game week two. Plus, you're in a look ahead spot with Backyard Brawl the following week, right, at home against West Virginia. That's going to be a tough little spot there for Pitt, even if you do think they'll get by West Virginia in week three. So, no, I don't think they go 4-0 out of conference. I think they go probably 3-1, but maybe 2-2.
Yeah, I think two and two, three and one is both on the table. Yeah, fair enough. Boston College at Missouri and then home against Michigan State in September. Mm. First of all, credit credit for scheduling multiple Power 5 teams to a team that does not have like an annual SEC rival or anything else. So credit for that. I don't think you're beating Missouri, but I think you can maybe get one against Michigan State.
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible. Year one head coach situation.
They could sneak Florida State at home after coming back from Ireland.
In Tallahassee doesn't help, but again, Florida State with a lot of turnover on that roster.
A lot of churn. International flight. I've seen Boston College do weirder shit.
Mm-hmm.
They kept
Count Bleanos, right? Or however you say his name. They kept him, right?
Castellanos.
Yeah. They kept him. Yep.
Yeah, his draft grade was not first or second round, so I think he came back to see if he can work on that.
Bag. Got the bag. He's back. I don't know how much of a bag you get from Boston
BC.
College.
Big cash.
Big cash, yeah. If BC stood for big cash, I think Halfley would be doing better than he is right now. That's for sure.
I don't know how much the NFL wants guys that look like Kyler Murray but can't throw, so I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, well.
Talking about Castellanos or Jeff Halfley?
Yes.
How about both? How do we feel about BC's schedule overall, though? Like, kind of an interesting September, but
is that Dartmouth in there? I don't know what that logo is.
Oh, Duquesne.
Duquesne.
Yeah. I love calling him Duquesne. Let's call him that. Duquesne.
Do you know where Duquesne is located?
Duquesne is located in Philadelphia?
I believe it's Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Oh, you're right. It is Pittsburgh. I always get that confused. Yeah.
Got the right state, though. Good job.
I did get the right state.
Some would argue you didn't, but that's a different discussion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Two very different
argue with
parts
Congress
of Pennsylvania.
About that one.
Argue with Congress. That's correct.
So this sets up, I think it sets up okay for Boston College. It is odd with the way that like four of their final five games are at home. And I feel like in a way especially for Boston College, that plays to your advantage. Like
cold
as it
weather.
starts to get cold and you're used to the cold and you're hosting Louisville, Syracuse, North Carolina and Pitt in four of your last five games. Like, I don't know. I mean, Louisville, Syracuse and Pitt aren't going to be fazed by the cold, but like,
yeah,
at least you're in your element. North Carolina's phased by defense in general, so we'll see how that goes.
I thought there was a – I'm skipping down to a different team, but I thought Syracuse had an odd stretch of five straight home games to start the year, or four straight, and then away, 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 home, away, away. So that was weird.
And then two more at home to finish out. Yeah,
it's very linear schedule.
Yeah, four games at home to start, all in September. They don't go on the road until they travel to the University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Good luck with that one.
They're going to Vegas in October. They have one home game like in early November, and then their final two are also at home. So basically they spend like a month and a half more or less on the road and then back at home to finish the year for two games.
A pretty favorable year one. Yeah. Oh, same as SMU?
Well, SMU's got the hell of October, but they start the whole year at home. Then they're on the road for the entire month of October. Then they're back at home, except for one trip out to good old Charlottesville in late November.
We haven't talked about SMU's Helltober yet, have we?
Let's get into that.
Oh, my.
Welcome, SMU.
October. All right. So I'm actually, to Starts begin this conversation, September. Let's really talk about the last week of September. They're home against Florida State. Okay. They go to Louisville. They have an open week. Then they're at Stanford, at Duke in October. And then home against Pitt on November 2nd. Have fun with that.
Yeah, so in 5 weeks, you get Florida State and three road trips, including one to the far west coast, one to the far east coast. And, that won't be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. At least SMU is like...
Home games for SMU, though.
At least SMU is like semi-centrally located. But it doesn't make it any easier. You're probably 3 hours either direction. Not a great time. Now, I think the opponents could be worse for sure. I mean, having Florida State, Louisville back to back, that really sucks. But then going to Stanford and then going to Duke, like if you're going to be flying across the country like that, kind of crisscrossing, it could be a lot worse getting Stanford and Duke back to back like that.
Am I missing something looking at SMU's schedule? Do they have like an open slot that they still need to fill? They've only got 11 games on their schedule right now.
You're correct. They have three open weeks currently, so they do need to fill a 12th game.
Interesting.
And they've already got an FCS game scheduled against Houston Christian, which I think used to be Houston Baptist, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they're going to have to find another like G5 out-of-conference game, I think.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Yeah, I mean, they have all their ACC games scheduled, so...
Mm-hmm.
If I were SMU, I'd schedule a nice cushy. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, it's going to be a road game, right?
That's what I was looking at. Is you've already got seven home games here.
They already got like, seven home games. I mean, it's going to be a road game, probably.
I mean, there's no rule says you can't do eight.
I would say it's probably that September 14th slot, probably.
Either that or October 12th. It seems like the ACC, I will say, it seems like the conference loaded November with a good number of bye weeks there, and probably like really like the first three weekends of November. Those
Dude,
are some pretty light weeks schedule.
I just didn't. I don't see them scheduling an away game in the midst of their already hellish October. Like I just don't see them doing it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like half the conference is off on October 12th. I'm looking at this.
Yeah, that week we've got
a lot
four,
of open
five, six games that week, and then Boston College, Duke, Florida State, Miami, SMU, and Virginia Tech all on bye that week.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams on bye. I want to talk about Virginia Tech's schedule real quick, Joey, because I think there is a chance from a scheduling standpoint they could be Louisville next year.
They could beat Louisville?
Be Louisville. Be the Louisville of this past season.
Ah, I see. Okay.
Based on their schedule and how it sets up. So
first problem with beating Louisville is they don't play them. So
right, yes, that. Right. Yeah. Well,
anyways.
It didn't go well when they went there this past year.
Yeah.
At Vanderbilt to start, okay, if you're playing an SEC team, you probably want it to be Vanderbilt, right?
You mm-hmm. need to win. You should win that game. You need to win that game, even on the road.
Home against Marshall. At Old Dominion, home against Rutgers. Now, Virginia Tech, of course, had three of these four teams in the non-con on the schedule this past season. The only one of them they beat was Old Dominion. They lost to Marshall. They lost to Rutgers. Virginia Tech will be favored, I think, in all four of those games to start the year. This next stretch is an interesting one, okay? They go to Miami, which we talked about earlier when we talked about Miami's schedule. That'll be a tough game for Virginia Tech. And then they travel to Stanford, which we were talking before we hit record. Like, when Scott and I were talking about the schedule and kind of, you know, where the West Coast teams would kind of factor in, the discussion that Scott and I had was like, all right, just don't, if you're going to schedule back-to-back weeks, right, and we're going to have to go to Stanford, just please, for the love of God, don't schedule the Clemson game at home right before, because it's going to be like a body blow situation. This might be worse, potentially, right, because Miami is really, really good in the trenches. Like, their offensive lines are really coming along, and you have to go there to play them, and then you immediately fly across the country to play Stanford. Now, you get 8 days, right? You're playing Miami on a Friday, so I guess that helps a little bit. But you have that two-game road stretch, Miami-Stanford, and then you have an open week. And then Boston College at home on a Thursday night. I think you'll be favored there.
Coming off the bye.
And then a three-game stretch coming up. So obviously you got like 9 days before you play Georgia Tech at home, which I think is a very pivotal game on the schedule for mm-hmm. both teams.
Feels like a toss, like Virginia Tech probably favored, but that's a toss up.
It's a toss up.
Going either way.
At Syracuse, probably favored, but not easy to go to the dome.
We'll see what Syracuse is in early November. Yeah.
Home against Clemson,
mm-hmm.
which we'll see what both teams look like in November. And then at Duke and UVA, at Duke, home against UVA to finish up after another open week. Virginia Tech's over under is probably going to be like 8-ish.
Yeah, 7.5, 8, something like that.
Yeah, 7.5, 8. I think there's some upside where the open weeks fall. I think there's two tough stretches just from a scheduling standpoint. It's the two consecutive road games at Miami, at Stanford, and then kind of that stretch of BC, Georgia Tech, at Syracuse and Clemson. But I think Tech could position themselves to have a pretty strong year just based on the schedule alone, especially if you get through September unscathed. You set up for a pretty big game against Miami on September 27th.
Yeah. Yeah, that four-game stretch you talk about, it's like that feels like the real pivotal stretch of the season.
It does.
I could see 1-3. I could maybe see 4-0. Like, mm-hmm. There's a lot of variance that happens there with depending on how those games all turn out. And it feels like you really almost could win or lose any one of them.
Yeah. And
it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So I think that's the stretch, the four-game stretch where you get three of the four at home, but it's sandwiched between those two open weeks. I think that's the meat of the schedule.
Yeah. Mike, how do you feel about Wake's schedule? Because...
Well, Joey.
This feels like about as quirky as could possibly be. So you start out, you're only at home through September. You start out North Carolina A&T, Virginia, Ole Miss, bye week, Louisiana, all at home. You still have not traveled anywhere. First road trip, all the way to Raleigh.
Like,
whoa.
30 minutes?
4-hour round trip, maybe? Is it, or even, probably not even
I think
that.
It's an like, hour.
I think it's an hour. Yeah, like, I think it's an hour. It's like outside the triangle. Yeah, it's like an hour.
Yeah.
It's, hour especially and 40 if you got a minutes. Piece,
police
hour and 40 minutes.
Hour, yeah. 40. Okay. Hour, so, 40.
So call it, you know, hour and 40 both ways. So maybe round it up, total of 4-hour round trip. Then you're at home against Clemson. So, Mike, at this point, it's October 19th. We're closing in on Halloween, and Wake Forest has traveled for, like, maybe 4 hours total.
Just in state.
Then they're going to UConn. Then they go to Stanford. Then they... You got a bye week, you get Cal at home, then you're at North Carolina, which again is another like 3-hour round trip or something like that. And then you're at Miami, and then you're home against Duke. But I'm just kind of tickled at this whole thing of like you basically go nowhere for a month and a half to start the year, and then back to back at UConn, at Stanford,
yeah,
before a bye week. That's got to be a little bit of a shock to the system, I feel like, after just sleeping at home all season.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the Stanford game, obviously, their furthest place to travel is either, what, UConn or Miami?
Yeah, Miami so, is the only other, you know, legit road trip there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Weird schedule.
Not a lock to make a bowl game.
Yep.
Not a lock.
I think the only other thing I wanted to call out here, and something that you kind of alluded to and were pointing towards, a couple of these weeks that are heavy bye weeks.
Yep.
So one of the ones I'm looking at is week 7, so that's October 12th. We've got 6 ACC games, bye weeks for Boston College, Duke, Florida State, Miami, SMU, and Virginia Tech. We've got November 2nd, that's week 10. We've got 6 games, and then Boston College, Cal, Georgia Tech, Virginia, and Wake Forest all on bye weeks. And then I believe it's the same week 12, November 16th. We've got 6 games, bye weeks for Duke, Florida State, Georgia Tech, Miami, NC State, and Virginia Tech that week. So I guess there's a lot of bye weeks, but it seems like the conference has made a point to cluster these a little bit, which that's fine. And especially, again, later in the season, you got teams that have played a lot of games. They get a little bit banged up. It's to everyone's benefit to start giving a couple bye weeks there as the season wears on. And, you know, hopefully everyone's at their, you know, playing as close to their best as possible by the end of the season and going into bowl season and conference championship season and all that. So.
Agree. Hey, what do you think? We touched on the opening, like, 2 weeks of the season for Georgia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of Georgia Tech's schedule?
I mean, just inherently, Georgia Tech is always going to have a difficult schedule these days because you've got the annual game against Georgia, and
mm-hmm.
Right. That's now become like you're playing the monster of college football every year, so that doesn't help. it's interesting. There's definitely some quirkiness here because they technically have 7 home games, but only 4 of them are Saturday games at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Because one of your home games is in Ireland. You have another home game that's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium against Notre Dame. And then you've got a third home game that's on a Thursday night against NC State. So for 7 home games, you don't have like a lot of home standard Saturday atmosphere going on, which is, again, quirky, interesting, strange. I don't know. I mean, it's not easy, but it just seems like it never is these days. It is one of the things that, again, we mentioned earlier, Louisville and Georgia Tech do not have annual opponents anymore. So you're changing out who you play every single year, all 8 slots. This is the first time since I think I've been alive that Georgia Tech won't play Clemson in a year. Like, that's been a standing annual rivalry for a long, long time. And even though Georgia Tech hasn't won that game in a number of years and would likely be a significant underdog again this year, there's still some fans in the Georgia Tech fan base that are like a little bit peeved that that rivalry has gone out the window here a little bit. So that's worth pointing out. Other than that, I don't know. It's a lot of, you know, home away, home away, home away, back and forth kind of that way. We talked earlier, I think the game at Virginia Tech is an interesting pivot point of how is that going to go. The nice thing is that, so again, they have 3 bye weeks with the week 0 game, 2 of them in November. So after coming back from Blacksburg, it's bye week, Miami at home, bye week, NC State at home, on the road in Athens, which, again, that's, again,
and
4-hour round trip. So,
and likely it doesn't matter, but you do have 9 days to prepare for Georgia.
Yeah, that's one of the, again, that's another quirk is you come home from Blacksburg.
I guess. Eight full days, yeah.
But. Come home from Blacksburg, bye week, Miami. So you get Miami on extra rest at home, and then you get another bye week, and then you get NC State at home on a Thursday. So, again, extra rest, but then also before Georgia, it's now 9 days of rest or whatever it is. So from that standpoint, I mean, that's 3 games that I'm not sure you're favored in any of them necessarily. We'll see what NC State is. But I think if all 3 of those teams live up to their expectations, NC State may be a small favorite in your building. But, you know, the biggest thing is going to be, can you be healthy? And I think those bye weeks really help there late in the game. But I will say it does suck. Like, you're starting in week 0. And you get 1 bye week between week 0 and the end of October. Like, you're playing 9 games in 10 weeks, and that's not ideal.
Right. It's definitely a I think the back half of the schedule's tough, but I think the 2 bye weeks make it manageable. It's really that opening stretch of the season before that second bye on November 2nd that I think is what you have to look at, because you are going to Ireland, then you come home and it's a plucky Georgia State team, right? Then you're going to the Carrier Dome, JPA Wireless Dome. I always call it the Carrier Dome. JMA,
Carrier
whatever.
Dome.
Carrier Dome. Home against VMI at Louisville before the bye. Like, not easy, right? But then you get your bye week.
I mean, VMI is like the only one there that I look at as anything resembling a layup.
Agree.
I mean, you could be you could realistically possibly be 1-4 going into that bye week. And that
you
would
could
suck.
Be.
That would be absolutely behind the 8-ball trying to get to a bowl game.
You like, could. Yeah. Well, yeah. With the yes, I agree. With the closing stretch of the schedule, I think it would be pretty tough. But I could also see a scenario there where, like, Georgia Tech's like 3-2 going into the bye, right? Like, let's say they lose to Florida State and lose at Louisville, and then win the 3 games they're probably going to be favored in. Like, you're probably favored going to Syracuse. You're going to be favored against Georgia Tech. You're going to be favored against VMI.
Yeah.
Like, let's just go chalk, right? Let's just say it's 3-2. I mean, I think Georgia Tech can absolutely get to a bowl game. You have Duke and North Carolina back-to-back, both those very winnable. You host Notre Dame, which, you know, Notre Dame will be good, and that'll be a tough game, but you get it at home. At Virginia Tech's toss-up game. you know, you historically play Miami well, especially at home, and you get it kind of sandwiched between two open weeks. NC State, I think, is winnable. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get killed by Georgia. But by then, hopefully, you have a bowl game wrapped up.
They haven't gotten killed by Georgia the last couple of years.
It was a
one score game this year.
No, like, Brock. Yeah. Discussion for a different time. You're right.
I'll also say this, by the way, on Sunday, January 28th.
Yes.
I'm not writing off that Florida State game as a loss.
I wouldn't. No. I wouldn't either.
We said going into last year that getting Louisville week one was the time to get them, and you saw that Georgia Tech, I think, had it like a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter in that game.
Yep. Should have won.
The amount of turnover on that Florida State roster, you're not going to get any sort of home field advantage from them. That is as good a situation as you could ask for to play Florida State, is right out of the gate.
On a different continent.
Yeah, different continent. You know, they're still breaking in all the new toys and the new pieces that they've got to work with. You might not be favored, but you can very much win that game.
You have more. I mean, going into that, I think you feel good about having more roster continuity with a team that played pretty well down the stretch, made a bowl game, all that good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Won a bowl game. You feel pretty good about it. Like, and you have the continuity coming back that Florida State doesn't have, and you have the quarterback in place. Not that DJU isn't any good. I think he's a lot better now than he was at Clemson. Mm-hmm. But, like, brand new offense, right? We just had this conversation with Miami going to the Swamp. A little bit different, obviously. It's going to be neutral site. But, like, week one, new quarterback, new system. Like, DJU's established, but entirely new offense playing against a Georgia Tech team with the continuity there. It's going to be a big test for the Georgia Tech defense. And so far as like this Florida State offense, I think it's going to be looking a lot different. And I think it's like a situation where if the Georgia Tech defense is looking as bad as it looked some weeks last year against Florida State offense, it's like kind of brand new. It's like, ah, shit, like sound the alarm a little bit.
There's not enough Guinness in Ireland for that.
Right. Right. But if you get the Georgia Tech defense that also showed up in other weeks last year, it was actually pretty good, and you kind of do what you're supposed to do against an offense replacing a ton of pieces. I don't know. Get a low turnover game from Haynes King. I absolutely agree with you. Like, I think even if Georgia Tech is an underdog here, I don't think it's by a lot.
I feel like I've seen a couple things already that, like, the early lines have, like, Florida State minus 12 or something.
12?
Give me double digits with Georgia Tech.
12?
Who's handicapping this in January?
12?
These are sucker bets, Scott. Do not 12. Bet
I'll
Labor
take
Day.
I'll take a plus 12.
Yes. Absolutely. I was going to say, I was going to say Florida State, like, by 5? 6?
More reasonable. 5 or 6, yeah.
5 or 6? Like, just inside a touchdown? 12?
Yeah, big questions about enough questions about Florida State that, yeah, like, don't know how we feel about laying double digits overseas, like,
in week one
against a functional plucky Georgia Tech team, like, you know,
with all that roster continuity coming back off a bowl team, I don't know if I'm laying 12. That seems like a lot.
Yeah,
GT gigantic ticket, baby. GT gigantic ticket on that's on the jackets.
GT can stand for some other stuff too. If we get, we get late enough into the night.
I was gonna say, I wasn't sure where you're going with that, Scott. Yeah. But
gigantic ticket on the bet. I don't know if you guys are still talking about Georgia Tech, but I just wanted to point out, I think Syracuse avoids both Clemson and Florida State. I think they're the only team that does that.
Wow. When's the last
time
that
happened? sets up well for Fran Brown to maybe get to bowl eligible in his first year.
I, looking at this schedule, I think I agree. Ohio, an open week before you host Stanford. Holy cross. I don't think Syracuse, I mean, it's good to get Georgia Tech at home, but like they're probably not going to win that game. So you're going to be 3-1 to start. You go to UNLV. That's a tough game. Like Barry Odom had UNLV.
That might be the single weirdest game on this entire conference schedule is Syracuse at UNLV.
In October, nonetheless.
What the hell? Like, somebody explain how that happened.
Yeah. We wanted to go golfing in Vegas in October.
That's right. That's right. Good weather for it.
Is that what you do in Vegas?
I do a lot of different stuff in Vegas.
You should do that at least for a little bit while you're there.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean, I'm looking at the schedule. I mean, Syracuse could absolutely make a bowl game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can win three of the first four, certainly. I think at UNLV is a tough one because they're good and it's on the road. At NC State.
Three winnable games in November.
For Boston sure.
College, Cal, UConn.
For sure. And I don't want to call the Georgia Tech game a toss-up, but at least you get them at home, right? Like, you're not going to be favored there, but at least you get them at home. You have a bye week scheduled, you know, right in the middle of those four games. UNLV is tough. At NC State, probably a little bit of a toss-up. You're probably going to be an underdog, but a little bit of a toss-up. Bye week at Pitt, certainly winnable. Virginia Tech at home, right? Very similar to the Georgia Tech game, where you're probably going to be an underdog, but at least you get them at home. At BC, at Cal, both winnable. UConn, winnable. Home against Miami. What version of Miami are we getting on the final week of the season?
Stranger things have happened.
I could see a bowl game for Syracuse. Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree.
Veteran quarterback in McCord? Absolutely.
I do think it has a good amount to do with how quickly can Fran Brown get this thing to gel, you know, and can they hit the ground running as a coaching staff? Like, or are there going to be, you know, a couple of kinks to work out? Like, some of your winnable games, as you're saying, Mike, and Scott as well, like, September, you know, if you can go 3-1, you're giving yourself a chance. But, like, honestly, none of those is a layup. Like, Ohio is usually a pretty decent MAC team. Georgia Tech, obviously, you know, you played them tough, but lost that game in Atlanta this year. Stanford, I'm just not going into this season thinking that Stanford is really a layup for anybody, and maybe that's a little bit naive of me. And Holy Cross, as we've said, I mean, that's a functional program that, you know, took Boston College to the wire this year. Like,
Holy Cross, though, year one coaching situation. Chesney left for JMU.
Oh, that's right? True. Bob Chesney left. All right. Well, yeah, maybe that's a layup. Maybe.
I mean, Syracuse will be. I mean, even if you don't think it's a layup, like, they should be favored there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Double-digit favorite in that game.
And, yeah.
Probably at UNLV as well. Probably at least close to double-digit favorite, if not double digits. So. Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, there's a number of those where you could trip up,
right?
But you know, if you really hit the ground running here. Yeah, I think bowl eligibility is on the table, but, you know, we got to kind of reassess that at the end of September, basically.
Well, and I also listed like eight games that are winnable there, and they're probably going to lose like three of them. Sure. So, yeah. I mean, you're going to be at that 5 or 6 win threshold. You're going to be flirting with it. So,
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see what the number is. Like, if somebody comes out with a Syracuse number at like 4.5, I'd be inclined to bet over.
Okay. I'm not sure that I'm willing to put my money on the Syracuse win total, like, one way or the other.
Well, I mean, one of us is a sick bastard and one of us is not. That's what it boils down to. I mean, I don't know.
I could see 6-6. I could see 3-9.
I don't care. You know, like, I'm a sicko. There it is. I mean, there's sound to support it.
That's right. That's right. Documented.
That's right.
Documented. I think that's all I got here, Mike. I don't think I have anything else on the
I've exhausted the schedule. We actually did pretty well with that conversation, I think.
Yeah. Dove deep. So, Scott, did we forget anything?
I don't think so. I think it was good.
Sweet.
Thank you. Nice.
Mike, anything else that we need to talk about here before we work on getting out of here?
No, I don't think so. More season recaps are coming.
Yep.
So be on the lookout for those.
Yep. Yeah, we'll keep working on those. We've got some ideas. We just need to line up some times for folks to come on and join us. But, we kind of intend on keeping that rolling. We got the second signing day coming up soon. I guess after that, maybe we can do kind of our brief recruiting overview, which we make no bones about the fact that we're not recruiting gurus and don't follow it all that closely team by team, but we can, you know, do a little bit of overall conference analysis. So we'll talk
Clemson
that way.
Has Clemson taken a transfer yet?
I don't believe that they have. And no. That's, yeah, we can talk about that next time because that's
so
maybe
Dabo
the biggest thing to talk about recruiting wise.
Soaking in the portal.
Play dumb
just
games.
Come back from our bowl recap.
Yeah, not soaking. No. No. That definitely not soaking.
Yeah. There's a joke that I'm just not going to make.
Well, when you guys get Will Kwok and Bush on for the Clemson recap, talk to him about that.
He said Will Quackenbush.
Quackenbush.
Right? Well, all right, there was different inflection there that I never mind. Anyways,
Well, he goes by Kwok Talk, so I almost called him Will Kwok, but then I remembered his whole name. So,
I mean, when I messaged him,
if you're listening,
Well, when I set up the invite to him, I always just call him Kwok. So,
yeah, I mean, well, that's
he
your
knows.
Twitter handle. I assume that's what you go by, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So, anyway. Yeah, I mean, play dumb games, win dumb prizes if you're Dabo Swinney. That's all I'll say.
Well, on that note, Mike, I've got nothing else if you want to work on getting out of here.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
right.
I'm good.
Sounds good.
Cool.
We'll come back. We'll keep recapping teams and doing some of those things. In the meantime, come find us on Twitter at FTRSJoey, at Mike McDaniel SI, together at BC Podcast ACC. You can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/@theaccfootballpodcast. Hit the subscribe button, hit the bell icon, hit the thumbs up, give us a like. We would appreciate all of those things. Appreciate those who have. We're on iTunes, Spotify, the platform formerly known as Google Podcasts. That I don't know where
YouTube
that's going
music.
These days.
YouTube music. Now.
There you go.
Yeah.
Slowly consolidating all those Google brands down together. That's good.
YouTube Music just takes our video podcast and it makes it like Spotify. So if you're listening on YouTube Music and then you open your phone, there's the video. So,
well, that doesn't sound half bad. There you go. I like that. Maybe I need to try that. Amazon Music, all those places. Go find it. Once again, Basketball Conference Podcast, and hit the subscribe button. We'd appreciate that. Mike, we're also on the social medias.
Facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review. Find some of our podcasts there. Instagram at BC Podcast ACC, youtube.com/@theaccfootballpodcast, like you just mentioned.
Yep. Basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Mike, did I forget anything?
You almost forgot the email.
Almost did, but then didn't. Scott, did I forget anything?
I don't think you forgot anything, just for listeners' sake, that if the recaps start getting slower, that's because my wife had our baby. So
theoretically, she hasn't done it yet, but
not yet, but any day now.
Well, just know like this is your first commitment and then that's,
yes,
that's
yeah.
afterwards.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This is actually already like my sixth commitment. So it's going to definitely move down the ladder to seven.
if she ever gives you any trouble, Scott, remember I can whip her into shape. Yeah.
I'm going to tell
just
your
kidding.
Dad you said that.
Just kidding, everybody. Just kidding. Don't need to call the FBI. We're good. Everything's fine.
Mike, you want to come back and keep recapping some teams?
Yep.
Let's do it. All right. For that guy, Mr. Mike McDaniel, for producer Scott, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again very, very soon as we keep recapping some teams. Until next time, hail the pit and go ACC.